Good morning, everyone. It's good to be back with you. If some of you don't know, I've been away for 2 weeks in a slightly colder part of the world, in the Northern Hemisphere in New York, visiting my sister. That's partly why I sound really gluggy and gross. Yesterday, I didn't have a voice, so I was prepared to mime this sermon. So if I break out into mime, that's why. But in all seriousness, this message this morning is both related to that imitating Christ theme of this year, of 2019. This is what we're hoping to do this year, is to learn about what it means to follow in Jesus' footsteps, to imitate him, to copy him. And in a sense, that's what I'm doing with my preaching outfit. The preacher that I heard in New York wore a similar style outfit, so I thought, new year, new me, I'll try a new outfit. There'll be a survey form at the back if you want to vote on it. There won't be. Just enough formal and just enough casual with a polo shirt. But I thought that this morning it'd be good to talk specifically about imitating Christ in Mark 1, but in a really short part of Mark 1, 21 to 45. It doesn't sound short. It's a decent chunk of the chapter. But realistically, there's a lot in there to try and look at about covering what it means to imitate Christ, to follow Jesus' example in how he lives his life. Because that's what imitating is all about, right? Some people often say imitation is the greatest form of flattery. When someone imitates you, they're flattering you because they really like you. And so perhaps I'm flattering that pastor in New York by looking like him, by trying to dress like him. But for this year, we want to imitate Christ because he's our best example for what it means to live a Christian life, right? We follow the example of the very person who instigated this whole new change, this whole new way of life. And so I don't have a lot of time to get through Mark 1. I was given about 10-15 minutes in the flight plan, so we're going to kind of move through it pretty quickly. But hopefully as I work my way through, we'll kind of pick up on these ideas of imitating Christ. As Bethany read that passage for us, I hope you picked up that 21 to 45 is realistically a series of short stories. Four different scenes, four different episodes where Jesus engages with people or engages with his Father. The first scene, Jesus is in a town in Capernaum. He's driving out an impure spirit. He's in a synagogue, he's teaching, and this impure spirit comes along. The next scene, Jesus is at home with Simon and Andrew, in the home of Simon and Andrew, two of the first disciples. And then there's a scene where he heals Simon's mother-in-law. And then later in the afternoon, the sun has gone down and loads of people are just going to flood the house. They've heard about him, they know about him, and they want to know and they want to see for themselves this man who's healing people, who's driving out spirits. The next scene that follows, Jesus is in a really different space. He draws himself away from people and he's by himself praying to his Father. And there's this kind of space of respite, of rest, in the midst of a very busy schedule. And the last story doesn't really have a place marker. There's no, like, Jesus is here. But Jesus is kind of just wandering around Galilee, and Mark pinpoints, zooms in on this one story with a leper. And we'll understand what we'll look at, and hopefully understand why that's important as we work through. And so as we look through these scenes, the game plan is that we'll understand what it means to imitate Christ in the very specific ways that Jesus shows it in these scenes. The first one, Jesus in a town in Capernaum, in a synagogue on the Sabbath. Now, when it comes to Jesus' ministry, when there's Jesus and the Sabbath, like next to each other in a sentence, pay attention, because Jesus tends to do stuff that's either miraculous, abnormal, countercultural, and people don't expect what Jesus is going to do. And so we kind of have a regular story where Jesus is teaching in the synagogue, right? He's this Jewish teacher. He's come to the synagogue on the Sabbath and he's teaching from the scriptures. And while this is going on, people begin to realize that Jesus is important. In verse 22, it says, "The people were amazed at his teaching because he taught them as one who had authority, not as the teachers of the law." So their people already made a distinction that this man, Jesus, was different. They might have heard a bit about him. They might have heard that he's kind of this important dude. He's healing people. He's going around saying some stuff. But they hadn't seen it for themselves just yet. And so they see him and hear him speak. And they're like, Jesus is different. Jesus teaches as someone who has authority. Not like the teachers of the law, not like the Pharisees, not like the scribes, people who know the Old Testament law like the back of their hand. They're like, Jesus is different. Jesus has authority. His words have authority. And then you enter the man with the impure spirit, right? And it's like in the middle of his teaching from the word, this man walks in. And from the very get-go, the spirit knows who Jesus is. And this is a theme that comes up frequently in Mark's gospel that we'll look at over this term, is that people get who Jesus is, and a lot of people don't get who Jesus is. And in this case, the impure spirit knows exactly who Jesus is. He calls him by name. He says, Jesus of Nazareth. He even knows where he's come from, knows his hometown, Jesus of Nazareth. Why have you come? Are you coming to destroy us? So this spirit is afraid, is fearful, knows who Jesus is, knows that Jesus has power, has authority, and he's concerned. But Jesus commands the spirit to be quiet, and it comes out of the man, and it leaves this man with a shriek. And Mark continues by saying the people were all so amazed that they asked each other, what is this? A new teaching? And with authority. He even gives orders to impure spirits, and they obey him. News about him spread quickly over the whole region of Galilee. Right, it's not surprising that people were suddenly amazed by what they had just seen. It's not a regular occurrence that some man wanders into a synagogue, starts teaching, another man wanders in with an impure spirit and cries out to this man by name, Jesus of Nazareth, and the spirit just listens immediately. So you place yourself in their shoes. Imagine yourself in the synagogue. You're listening to this man. He's convincing. He's persuasive. He's honest. He teaches with integrity and authority. And this man walks in, and suddenly, he's transformed. The spirit is no longer in him. This impure, evil spirit is no longer in him. And this is certainly a miraculous scene that occurs, and people haven't experienced anything the likes of. They've seen similar stuff with diviners and magicians, and this idea is common, but nothing with such authority and such power. They recognize that Jesus has authority, that Jesus' words have authority. And that's a thought that I want you to hold on to, because we'll get back to it later. The second scene that we encounter is when Jesus leaves the synagogue and goes to the home of Simon and Andrew. It's an interesting one because I think it places Jesus within a space that's normally for rest and relaxation, right? Our homes are places where we go to rest, right? We perhaps more often than not don't work from home. And so when we're coming home, we're coming back from work, having spent a day full of whatever it is that we do to rest, to relax, to spend some time, to have a break. And so this is what Jesus is doing. Jesus is coming back home to have a bit of a break, to have some time out, to rest. Yet despite this, Jesus continues to serve those he has come to serve. It's not like Jesus gets home and he's like, all right, sweet, my mission for the kingdom is done now. I can take a bit of a break. I'll switch off now. No, he keeps working. He keeps serving. The first interaction he has is with Simon's mother-in-law, whom Jesus heals because she's been bedridden with a fever. But then Jesus' service doesn't just stop with her, right? Someone who's in the home he's just gone to. But later in the evening, as the sun's gone down, people pour over to the house, hearing about Jesus, knowing that Jesus is this important guy, and Jesus doesn't turn them away. He brings them in and continues to heal them, continues to drive out demons, continues to teach. Now, I think this tells us something really important about Jesus' mission and Jesus' commitment to his mission. See, in a place where we would perhaps normally expect to take a break, to rest, to relax, to have some time off, particularly once the sun's gone down and you're in your own home, Jesus continued to work, Jesus continued to serve, Jesus continued to heal people. What does that say for us about how we should follow Jesus and follow his commitment? We'll answer that question later. The next scene is where Jesus does eventually find some rest. But not just physical rest, finds rest for his spirit. Very early on in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. See, the following day was full of teaching, full of miracles, full of his power going out. He was understandably tired, right? Jesus is still a man, still a human, still gets tired, and would have been tired. And so he gets up, before the sun's even come up, and goes to a place where he's by himself to pray, to be with his Father. David Garland says this in a commentary: the desire for secluded prayer makes it plain that Jesus isn't a sorcerer working by magic independent of God's help. His authority, strength, and power come from God alone. So he's doing all these things, he's doing all this teaching, all these miracles, and he goes to spend time with his Father to be refreshed, be reinvigorated, because God's the one giving him the power to do it in the first place. See, Jesus' actions aren't ever done in his own strength. Jesus doesn't heal sicknesses and heal diseases and drive out demons because he's strong on his own. He's refueled and refreshed by God. God gives him the strength and the power to keep performing his kingdom duties. So what does Jesus' moment of rest and space with God in that solitary place mean for us if we're going to imitate him? Feel free to either jot that question down or remember it in your head, because we'll come back to it later. The final scene is in verses 40 to 45, where Jesus heals a man with leprosy. The interesting thing, as I said at the start, is that Mark singles out this particular story, right? He says at the end of verse 39 that Jesus goes around, starts preaching throughout Galilee, in synagogues, and drives out demons and continues doing his thing, right? It's like, it's almost like seen in movies like Rocky, where there's a training montage and have this really uplifting music, and Rocky's like beating on some things and he's getting stronger and fitter. It's almost like that, like Jesus, like, and now Jesus goes out into Galilee and starts preaching and teaching and driving out demons. Like, cue the montage of all his different actions, right? And then Mark zooms in on this one story with the leper. Why? Why would he do that? Why is it important? Well, this idea of clean and being clean is the big ticket thing to note in this story. See, this man would have been excluded from all aspects of community. He was leprous. It didn't necessarily mean in the Bible when it says leprosy, it doesn't necessarily mean he had leprosy, the disease, but other types of skin diseases and other issues that made you unclean. And so that's what that's saying. And so this man is separated from society. He's pulled away from society. He has rules around how he can interact with people. It's made him unclean for every aspect of community life. And there are punishments for if he interacted with people improperly or in the wrong way, because if he interacted with people, he made them unclean, right? And so this man is seen as like the bottom of the bottom, the low of the low, someone who should be put aside, someone who shouldn't even be dealt with. And it was only the priest who could say, oh yes, this man is clean. In the Old Testament and all the laws that talk about clean and unclean, it's only the priest that can have the final say on whether someone has been healed and has been made clean again. And so this man, knowing his situation, knowing the fact that he's been cast aside from community for so long, he takes a chance on Jesus. He takes a chance on this man who's been going around teaching and preaching and driving out demons and healing sicknesses. Mark doesn't say how long this man has had leprosy for, but regardless of the length of time, we can perhaps understand his loneliness, the fact he's an outcast, he's been passed aside. And you can feel the yearning in his words. He falls to his knees in front of Jesus and he says, if you are willing, please clean me. Make me clean. Help me be back in society. Help me be a regular person again. And then we have an interesting comment. Because Jesus was indignant. Jesus angry, frustrated, annoyed, but what exactly? Other versions translate that phrase as Jesus has pity on him, or he's moved to compassion. But if we take what the NIV says, what is Jesus angry at? I don't think he's angry at the man for coming to him. I don't think he's angry that this man has kind of come out to him and is like, oh, you're unclean, like I can't be with you, because that's not how Jesus functions in the Bible. No, he's perhaps angry of the impact this sickness, this disease has had on this man's life, knowing what it's caused him, knowing how it's made portrayed him to other people. And so despite that anger, Jesus heals the man. He makes him clean, and then he gives him really specific instruction. He says, "See that you don't tell this to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing, as a testimony to them." It seems odd that Jesus sends this man off and sternly tells him to not tell anyone, right? What? Like, you're being cleansed. Matt, put yourself in his shoes, right? You've had leprosy for however many years, you're separated from society, and finally you don't have leprosy anymore, and you're just going to be told to be quiet and don't tell anyone. Like, no. You're going to be like, yes, like, guys, look, I'm clean. Look at me. I'm now healed. But Jesus says, no, don't do that. Even though that's what he ends up going and doing, right? Like, he ends up doing that very thing. But Jesus tells him not to do that for a very specific reason. Because Jesus isn't just concerned with healing this man's physical problems, right? Jesus isn't just concerned with sorting out his physical sickness and his physical disease and putting him on his way. No, Jesus cares about the emotional and communal impacts. He cares about the emotional and communal healing. See, Jesus redeems us to himself and to one another. And so when Jesus was telling him to go and present himself to the priest, it was because the priest could have the final say in saying, oh, you are clean. You are clean, and now you can be part of society again. Because theoretically, if he doesn't go to the priest, he's still in this weird state of limbo. No one knows whether he's really clean or not. Can they trust him, right? Like, if he doesn't go to the priest and the priest hasn't said he's clean, he's going around saying, Jesus healed me. Do you trust him? Do you listen to him? And so Jesus is saying that for a very specific purpose, that he would actually be clean fully, not just physically, not just emotionally, but communally, be brought back into harmony with the town that he was from, with the people that he perhaps knew. Now, let's address the themes and questions that arose from these scenes, the four scenes that we've worked through. Because the question is, how do they influence or instruct us in imitating Christ? When it comes to the first story, I made the comment that this scene is really to do about authority. Who has authority? And we see that Jesus' teaching and his words hold power and authority, even over impure and evil spirits. And that's something that's common throughout the book of Mark, as we'll see. See, when we follow Jesus, when we say we want to follow Jesus, we follow someone who has power, who has authority, who has strength, who has victory over a world that is broken. Victory over a world that is marred by sin, that is damaged by evil. And so we recognize that we imitate a man who has power and authority in the heavens and in the earth. It gives us comfort and courage to know that he is for us. He is leading us and he is guiding our path. Right? Jesus has authority, and so we follow someone who has authority. We're not just following a leader who doesn't have authority and who's just guiding us emptily or to anywhere. We don't really know where we're going. Jesus is guiding us on straight paths because he has authority and power in the heavens and in the earth. And the question I left us in that second scene was, how does Jesus' commitment to his mission change how we should imitate him? See, what I mean is, does our faith, does our commitment to Jesus' mission switch off when we need some time out? Do we just picture our homes, our places of rest and rejuvenation, refreshment, as a purely private space? That's just for us. That's just for me. Do we keep our home so separate from the public that we don't allow anyone in? Now, there is time for our homes to be that place of rest. I'm not saying that our homes always need to be a place of work and service. But if all aspects of our lives are to be offered for Christ's mission, that includes our homes. It includes our workplaces, our study spaces, our friendship groups, our clubs, our sport groups. The challenge is, how are you going to show missional hospitality to people by welcoming them into your home? Or if you don't own a home or you live with your parents, how are you going to show missional hospitality to your friends, family, uni mates, work colleagues? The list goes on. It doesn't necessarily have to be in your home. You don't have to be like Jesus and serve people while being in a place of rest. How are you going to show missional hospitality to people, whether it be at home or at work or in clubs or sport groups or weekend groups, whatever it might be? The question from the third scene was, what does Jesus' moment of rest and space with God in that solitary place mean for how we imitate Christ? The simple question is, how do we view prayer, right? Like, that's realistically the question I'm asking. How do you view prayer? Is it simply a spiritual task that you perform day in, day out to tick off the list of spiritual duties, spiritual obediences, things I just have to do? Or is prayer more than that? See, prayer should be seen as how Jesus sees prayer, a space to stop, to rest and speak with his Father, to be refreshed and restored by Jesus. In a book that I've been reading called The Imperfect Disciple, Jared C. Wilson speaks of the relationship between God and us. And he talks about this idea that God upholds his relationship with us through his word, right? Through this book, this Bible, he has all that's revealed to us, and he speaks to us through his word. And our response to him speaking to us through his word is to speak to him in prayer. They coincide, right? God speaks to us through his word, we speak to him through prayer. And so if prayer is no longer about a spiritual task or an obedience or something just to tick off, but it's more about relationship and building a relationship, prayer takes on another meaning. Prayer becomes important. Prayer becomes a source of sustenance, a source of restoration and rejuvenation, because it's not about just ticking something off and being happy with it. It's about recognizing that we are coming to God and saying, I can't do this on my own. I don't have the strength. You fill me afresh. The last scene, Jesus heals the leper. Now, I didn't ask a question there. I kind of just ended. Friends, we're like the leper. We're in need of cleansing and healing, just like that man did. Regardless of whether we are yet to give our lives to Jesus or we've been following him for years, we always need the cleansing and healing hand of Jesus in our lives. I don't know what sin is in your life, what thing you're holding onto, what thing that's got in the way of Jesus or got in the way of God, but we need to hand it over to him. We need to fall on our knees like the leper did and beg, if you're willing, make me clean. Only Jesus can make us clean. And he is willing and he desires to make us clean, but not with a touch like he did for the leper, but he makes us clean through the blood that he shed for us on the cross. That's what it means to follow Jesus and imitate him. To live radically different lives, radically abnormal lives that recognize that we're to serve this world, not to get stuff out of it. To serve him and to serve people in this world. To love others, to care for others. To show missional hospitality. To take rest in Jesus and in God by praying. And so coming to him daily and saying, I'm sorry, I need your strength. I need your power. I can't do this on my own. I'm going to close in prayer. But I want to say, if you were challenged by anything this morning, and you'd like to chat to someone about that, or if you'd like someone to pray with you, then by all means, grab me at the end of the service or grab an elder. And pray. Chat. Talk about what you've been challenged by. Because we'd love to do that. But let me pray for us as we go out and think about these words. Our Heavenly Father, we have a pretty tough task of imitating you. You who is perfect, who never sinned, who never failed, who never ceased to love others, to serve others, to proclaim the good news of your kingdom that was breaking into this world. And so you've got a tall order to try and imitate you, but Lord, we know that we can't do that on our own strength, and so help us to daily fall at your knees and ask for your help, to be cleansed of the things that hold us back, to be cleansed of the sin that we're holding onto and not letting go of, so that we can fully serve you, that we can fully follow in your footsteps and live a life of radical difference, of radical mission, of radical faith, that is so bold and so different that this world hasn't ever seen, that people are caused to question. And so, Lord, as we kick off this year into 2019 and we keep working our way through Mark, fill us afresh with your Spirit so that we can go from this place refueled, refreshed, rejuvenated in your Spirit to be able to live the lives that you are calling us to live for you. And I pray all these things in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.